You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
To paraphrase the great Iggy Pop, it's another rainy evening at Hendox. It is the Massive Report, and I'm Brian Phillips. We are brought to you by 180 Property Development, your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dream. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. And, of course, they are our partner in the ticket giveaway. And we will have a pair for the Orlando City game. You listen to the podcast, and then there will be where's the question going to be posted, Sam? It's been so long since I've done this, I've forgotten everything.
It'll be posted on the website.
On the website and on Twitter. There will be a question pertaining to what we discuss. And I have a feeling it'll be a question pertaining to something Alex says, because he is fired up. He's got a can of Red Bull. He's ready to go. Murph is here. Mike is here. Alex is here. Ralph is in the corner because they have a special in White Claw tonight or something. You know, White Claw, if they came in here and they said, huh, this is not our target demo. Ralph is not our target demo. But enjoy, nonetheless. Here, we'll buy you a round, Ralph.
I'm glad we're shaming Ralph for White Claw on the podcast, because we are definitely shaming him off air, and now it's
here, let
just,
me
you know.
Let me just have a sip of my beer here.
When there's an opportunity to shame Ralph,
Well, you know, we are postponing the inevitable here by shaming Ralph. Let's just rip the Band-Aid right off so that we can make time to discuss the U.S. national team and their triumphant return to form. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But last night, yesterday evening, a beautiful sunny evening at Mapfre Stadium, spoiled by a beat-up Sporting KC 1-0. And in this game, David Akam came up lame and had to leave early. Has a hamstring. Does anyone know if he's severely injured, or we don't know?
No, we probably won't hear anything till Wednesday, I imagine.
Okay.
He was going to get an MRI, is what he said after the game.
Harrison Redd is not a guy who opened for Willie Nelson on Sunday night. It is, in fact, Harrison getting a red card. Harrison Offal just back from injury, sent off. Therefore, according to the laws of the game, he will not be allowed to play on Sunday. So it's just darkness all around. What do we make of this, if anything? Alex, you have your hand in the air. You seem to want to go first. You just about knocked over Ralph's White Claw. You had that hand in the air so fast.
This team is just... I don't even know how to put it into words. It's as if we are all in a bad dream that was designed to make us as miserable as humanly possible. Anything bad that could possibly happen is happening.
Robert Barzihai era.
Or
lots of Fitzgerald's time.
Okay.
There have been way more nightmares than years of this team.
I get Fitz, but even under Bobby, like, I understood what Bobby was trying to do, and we scored
really,
goals.
Really, because Bobby didn't.
We scored goals. We had some fun players. Boy,
this has gotten very catty already.
Jairo Arrieta and...
The goals will come era and how many games...
Oman Vargas.
Yes, but you have to remember what MLS was at that point in time, and it's not that anymore.
I know. It's just there's at least with these other coaches, and Andrulis, I think, is probably the big exception to this, but there
Supporters
was...
Supporters Shield winner Greg Andrulis.
Okay, but there was a sense of we're going to get a lot better. I just don't feel that with this team right now at all.
Okay. So when it comes to Varziha or Andrulis or any of these guys, we're remembering yesteryear with this fantasy, right?
Because we should also say with Varziha that he was a club legend, and the Caleb Porter's only spot in crew history is that stupid out-of-bounds goal.
Is that what the problem is?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay, I think we're getting
still salty about that.
I'm definitely still salty.
It was also against him that Ethan Finley rose to prominence, so he's part of that too.
You're like... Here's the biggest thing. When it comes to Porter, you're talking about a lack of an identity, right? You had mentioned that prior to us starting the show, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what fans are expecting with this group, considering that this, outside of two guys, this is all Berhalter's team. And the 4-2-3-1, it's the same system, but it's played differently. The way it operates is different. Okay? So, to me, it's kind of like you're a chef, okay? And they go, hey, Berhalter, you're really good at making cheesecake. Here's a bunch of ingredients to make a cheesecake. Then they go, hey, Porter, you're really good at making chocolate cake. Here's the ingredients for cheesecake. Go make good chocolate cake. That's not how it works.
I get that, but when you go into a preseason and you've got all the supporters in a bar together and you're talking about how you're going to compete in every
people say lots of stuff at bars, man.
And I understand.
Ralph drinks White Claw there.
I understand that. But, I mean, he made it very clear that he was going to compete with this group of guys and that this wasn't a rebuilding year. This was a we're going to push beyond what Berhalter did year.
Okay,
and that's not what this is.
Absolutely.
This is now a we need to blow it up and start from scratch here.
It is, because we're at a point now where this group, the core of this team, is past their prime. The window closed for this team being successful in terms of title runs. Okay, Higuain, if he's your guy, as well as he's done and as much as we all really like him, and he's a hell of a player, and he's a crew legend, he's going to be on the Mount Rushmore of crewdom, right, down the road. He's 34. And if you're talking about your attacking midfielder being 34 years old, he's the guy that you're leaning on to make this thing tick. And in a system where Porter's system is different than Berhalter's, Porter's system is predicated from an offensive standpoint on having outside backs do their job. We were on fourth and fifth string outside backs for a good chunk of this
season.
Connor
Maloney played.
Right. Okay. So you lose Milton before the season even gets going.
Sure.
Offal's out for 6 weeks with a broken jaw. You have the looming departure of Zach Steffen. Who knows what the hell's going to happen with Trapp? Zardes isn't doing anything. What in the world can people expect from Caleb Porter? He's not a magician. Yeah, he's saying all the right things, and I bet he even meant it. But
sure he did.
It doesn't mean that he is lacking in any ability. This roster is mediocre at best. At its best form, then when you have all these injuries, it's below that.
Okay, but this is a team that consecutively made the playoffs. It consistently beats teams. And I get that you're down players. That does not excuse losing five games in a row. This does not excuse having, you know, 1 point in however, what, eight games, something like that. It's not good enough, and they're not playing even to the level of an injury depleted team.
I'm sure Porter would agree with you that it's not good enough.
But they are the second worst team in the league in terms of form right now, behind Cincinnati, who are a complete dumpster fire. It's got to be better. And from what Porter said preseason and what he said in the beginning of the season, and really the place he set the bar all year long, and now he's kind of starting to walk it back a little bit and say, oh, you know, the injuries, we can only do so much, blah, blah, blah. But up until, you know, just the last couple weeks here when we couldn't turn it around, it was we're going to turn it around.
Well, yeah, because
so he's fallen short.
Well, yeah, he believes that, but sometimes reality smacks you in the face. You're talking about a guy who was away from the game for a year. He comes back. Of course he's fired up. He's ready to go. He sees this team and what they've done. But until you really get your hands on it and train with them every day and go to war with them, you don't really have a full idea of what this team can or can't do. I think he's starting to figure out that this team doesn't have it, and it certainly doesn't have it when half of what would be the starting lineup is gone.
Now, Murph, you had mentioned that you have a different view than the rest of us because you go to training. What do you learn from training that perhaps can give us a different view than what we're seeing in the games?
Well, at this point, you're seeing a lot of the same just because so many guys have played. But I think, just to be clear here, I am on Mike's side. I think, you know, and this has nothing to do with, you know, being there or, you know, anything like that. I think that, just in general, you know, pick your team. Unless something catastrophic happens, I think it's poor management by the people up top to fire somebody without giving them at least a year. You know, I think you've got to build, and it's, you know, Cleveland Browns are an example of, you know, let's just keep firing coaches and not getting any better. And I don't think the crew, and the new ownership, I think, figured that out.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, you don't want to start down that path with the crew. But in terms of what I think they're doing, you know, they have an identity. You know, they want to play similar to the way Greg did. But if you go back and look at last year, the crew didn't play the way Greg wanted to for a chunk of last season just because they were, you know, like Mike said, you know, guys were getting older. You know, it was the Giassi Zardes show, and Greg has always been able to make forwards out of nothing. And, you know, you're seeing Giassi with the national team look, you know, like the Giassi last year where he hasn't here. And, you know, Higuain was still good enough, but you definitely saw him slow down last year. I mean, he went from 14 assists in 2017 to 9 in 2018 in more games. You know, so Pedro Santos, he's a guy who didn't do anything the last year and a half, has come alive under Caleb.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a positive. And, you know, I think the biggest question for this team isn't offensively, it's defensively now. Mm-hmm. You know, last year the defense kept them in the playoff race when the offense wasn't good enough. And we knew that the offense wasn't going to be much better because it's the same guys. The defense started the year well, and, you know, they had four shutouts, I think, in the first five games or whatever it was, and Zach was a big part of that. But, you know, you're starting to see cracks in that defense, and you've missed guys. I mean, I think that's part of it. But one thing I do want to say real quick before we shift gears is the preseason was very weird for this team because there was no, you know, they're meeting Caleb Porter on day one of practice, you know, and normally, you know, Greg was hired in December. He had time to meet the guys in town. They had time to build a plan. You know, they traded Chad Marshall for Michael Parkhurst, essentially. And, you know, you started to see Greg shape a roster a little bit. The crew had a draft, and that was it. With this, you know, Caleb and Tim Bezbachenko, there was no time to, you know, judge these guys and then see them for a week in training at the beginning of preseason and then, you know, have moves in mind. Because of the situation with the ownership change and when it happened, you know, I think that's a factor that people aren't considering.
I think he deserves a mulligan. I get frustrated. I do, Alex. I hear you, man. I do. But
when frustration's absolutely warranted. But, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I mean, they're frustrated. He's frustrated.
Sure. Yeah. I just think there are so many unique circumstances surrounding this team in 2019 that I'm just giving them, you know, an incomplete on the top of their page or whatever. I think that we're not going to answer most of these questions this season.
Right.
This is not a playoff team. I'm looking at the table on my phone, and only New England and Cincinnati are behind us.
Yeah.
And the Eastern Conference has slowly shifted into two parts, and you know, the playoff line is at 23 points, and we have 17, and we have teams to climb over. It's not going to happen.
It's going to be tough, to say the least.
What I want to see is just what I saw the other night was J.J. Williams on the field.
Well,
and that was more by necessity. But I think it's time to take a look at guys like him.
Well, you asked about seeing things at practice, and J.J. Williams is not a guy that's earning time.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
all right.
You know, we got to watch a full practice last week, and Caleb is on J.J. the whole time. You know, when they're in a scrimmage about – you can't be jogging back. This isn't Kentucky, you know.
Okay.
And this is, you know, he's getting on in a good way. But, you know, you're a rookie with an opportunity here to get minutes with Giassi gone. And you're not busting your butt, all of, you know, like things like that. And I know people don't see this and they see what he did yesterday. And he comes on and gives a little bit of a spark and stuff. But trust me when I say there are reasons that certain guys are seeing the field and certain guys aren't. And, you know, it's not like they're just like, well, Patrick Mullins is an MLS veteran, so we're going to start. You know, Patrick Mullins hasn't scored a goal. He's, you know, what, he scored one last year?
And that
year,
one that he left
he earned a
on
penalty.
The field on Sunday
well, you know,
was...
Without being at training, I noticed that yesterday at the game, because I was sitting right behind behind Kansas City's bench, which is the side of the field where J.J. was playing forward, right? And you can see Porter really well. Porter was on his ass constantly saying, J.J., get here! Because J.J. is loafing around. Like, people saw where he knocked that dude on his butt and acted like that was great. It's like, okay, it didn't accomplish anything. From a fan standpoint, okay, that's neat, I guess. But from a coach's standpoint, he wasn't working. He was a guy, again, like Pat's saying, he's a guy who comes in the game and he was loafing. I'm like, you are a rookie. Earn these minutes. Show that you can make an impact, and he did nothing but knock a guy on his butt. Big deal. That means
but
nothing.
Let's go back. Actually, Alex, go ahead. You have a second.
Well, and I just want to say, you know, I'm not on the fire Caleb Porter bus right now, but I do think, you know, we had Tim on a couple weeks ago, and he talked about wanting to spend money on new designated players. I'm not sure that you make that kind of an investment with a coach that has not shown anything yet. I'm not sure that you invest this season even.
Hold on.
I would want to wait. And as for the thing, this idea about the team being super old, we have an average age of 26.5. We're basically smack dab in the middle of the league in terms of age. And most of that age is from our bench.
Right.
A lot of our team is very young. This team has not kind of aged out. We're just not seeing the production from them that we saw in previous years.
But the core players.
One more thing. I agree that the defense is letting us down here. But the thing is, we're not getting bailed out by the offense. We're having issues on both sides of the ball. Whereas at least under Berhalter, we would have periods of time where we would have really streaky goal streaks and Jossie would be scoring like crazy. And then we would have weeks where Jossie wouldn't score. And sometimes he wouldn't score for two or three games in a row. In the defense, we'd get clean sheets. We would get a point out of those games. We're not seeing anything on either side now. And it's just, we look lost and it's really hard to watch.
Yes, but coming into the season, this isn't a young team. The core of the team is past its prime in the sense that Higuain, the engine, 34. When we again, I'm talking about the start of the season. Miram, 30, hasn't been good in a year and a half. You're talking about Pedro Santos. He's 31 or 32.
31.
So and he
Harrison
Offal,
32.
So that's what I'm talking about. Like all these guys, they're on the wrong side of 30. And I'm sorry, but in sports, especially right now in modern soccer, it's about speed and pace. It's not the days of where Carlos Valderrama could be 48 years old, stand in the middle of the field, and just drop dimes all day. That's not how it works. Secondly,
he might still be able to drop dimes.
You got Ignacio Piatti, and you've got Diego Valeri, and there are all kinds of high-level attacking midfielders who get the job done in this league.
Right.
So we're not, you know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic is one of the top goal scorers
in the league. Yeah, but he's a freak. He's worldly. Okay.
But what I'm saying is, I mean, I don't think Pedro Santos is somebody that you have to put on the transfer market because he's 31
years old. I'm not saying that
old.
Either. What I'm saying is if you're looking at this team and you're talking about the apex was 2015 for this collective group. Secondly, you're saying Porter hasn't proven himself? You mean the guy that built Akron into a perennial power, won an NCAA title, a team that was the best in the West with Portland multiple years, won an MLS Cup? He hasn't proven himself? What are you talking about?
I think that he's proven himself in other teams. I just have not
17
seen
17 games into a season without any players that fit what he's trying to do. I don't understand this Porter out stuff. It makes no sense.
Well, he's not a Porter out guy.
I'm let's not invest all the way in him right now because I'm not sure. And you have to keep in mind too from people who have played with him on other teams, he can be a difficult guy to work with.
Yes, and I think
he's got a reputation as not being the best coach.
And I think
he's got the reputation for being kind of a hard ass. Doesn't mean he's not a good coach. Yeah. People say that about Bruce Arena, and he's won a ton of titles.
Guys learn too. You know, we have it right here with John Tortorella, who just turned 61 years old today. There was a time when
people
were ready to write him off. No, he's a great coach, but no one can work with him. He's crazy. He's this. He's that. He's evolved, and he's become the best version of himself at the age of 61. I don't think anyone wants to see him go away now. He's a great coach.
Yeah.
He's evolved. He's learned. He's grown. There's no reason to think that Porter can't also learn and grow, and I just think it's way too early to even have this discussion. It would be destructive to fire the manager at this point.
Oh, I agree.
We need to get through this season and then see where we are. Yeah. That's what I think.
Well, they have – well, you're talking about an investment. They've invested 5 years. So they're not going to fire him. So for even – again, what world do we live in where logically you go, we give a coach a half a season to prove what he's going to do with another group of players that none of them are his.
Yes.
So to even say, let's not invest, that's the exact opposite of what we should do. We should invest in the guy because he signed a five-year deal, so let's get players that fit his system. And if by year three we're not seeing a turnaround, maybe then you start having that conversation.
And this is Major League Soccer, where Philadelphia is atop the table in the Eastern Conference. Philadelphia! Did anyone see that coming this year? This league can change so fast. You look at, Atlanta has climbed up after their bad start. But the point is, things can change so fast. And I just think we need to get through this year learning as much as we can about the guys that are on the roster. And I think the issue with J.J. Williams from a fan's, because I look at myself on this podcast as the dumb fan who doesn't know anything.
That's my job.
And Ralph's here.
And, And, you know, when I see J.J. on TV yesterday, I see a guy who jumps off the screen. It's because you look at him, you go, oh, my God, this guy is, like, huge, and he's an athlete.
There's plenty of potential there.
There's plenty. But if he's not working, that's inexcusable. Right. Everyone can work. And that's, you know, that can be one of Porter's number one challenges for the balance of the season is to go, look, there's talent here. I got to figure out how to get it out of him.
Sure.
If he's immature, then you grow him up.
Right.
And if he doesn't get it, then you get rid of him.
Absolutely.
And I think the way I look at this year, and it's taken me some time to kind of get to this point because you're right. Caleb came in. He said a lot of very positive things, and I think a lot of people believed him because of the track record he had. The fact that on a pretty, you know, not a basic level, a little bit more than that, soccer-wise, him and Greg played a similar style, so it made sense that these players should work with him. And we saw early in the season it was working. And, you know, injuries certainly played a part in derailing kind of that, and I think there's a confidence issue right now with this team. You know, you lose this many games. Hector Jimenez said it yesterday after the game, you know. We've got to get our confidence back. We've got to get that mentality of winning back. You know, and there's a part of that. But I think when it comes to Caleb, he looked at this roster, thought it was good enough for what he did. And I think they've quickly figured out the difference between him and Greg.
Yep.
You know, he wants guys, and he's talked about this, he wants guys that are going to, you know, bust their butts all the time, and you know soccer is their lives, and you know maybe some of these guys aren't that way. I think there's also the, you know, Greg was very much a, I'm going to program you how exactly I want you to play. You're going to know every detail of how you're going to act in your position in this game. Caleb wants guys to play a little bit freer. You know, he gives them instruction, but he's not as every detail tactically. And, you know, there are pros and cons to both, I think. And obviously Greg is now the U.S. national team coach and I think is starting to show with a team that's spent some time together, hey, this can work. You know, we'll see when they play tougher competition, but there's a reason Greg is where he is.
Yeah.
Caleb is, you know, still coaching MLS. I still think he's a good coach. But I also think that these guys spent 5 years, the core right. of these guys, and we can debate all day whether they're past their prime or not, but the core of these guys spent 5 years doing it the Greg Berhalter, Josh Wolf, Pat on, you know, those guys way.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in a whole new staff and they do things a little bit differently. And it's going to take time. And if that means blowing it up,
I think you have to.
Yeah, and I'm not disagreeing. You know, I think there are guys on this team that make sense for Caleb. I think that.
Who are they, you think?
I think you're. Though he hasn't played well, I think David Guzman is obviously a guy. I think he's got to find his form. I think Hector's a guy that.
Absolutely.
Hector looked great yesterday.
Yeah, he'll work under any. Hector will do whatever you want him to. You know, I think Will, you know, Will, I don't know his future, but obviously he's played with Caleb before. I don't think he's, you know, I think some games he's looked really good. I think sometimes he's been inconsistent. I think defensively, I question the work that he wants guys to put in of a lot of the back, you know, the true defenders. I'm not necessarily like a guy like Harrison Awful. I almost don't even consider a defender.
Right.
He's too much, but, you know, and I'll be interested to see how when Milton gets back. As a more defensive fullback who can get forward, how he works. But, you know, Jonathan, who has been fine this year, but it's the daily, you know, you've got to bust your ass all the time type of thing. Gaston, you know, coming off that injury, I think he's been good, but there's been mistakes. Alex Crenali's still young and learn.
So, I haven't seen him in a while.
Right, and, you know, he's been okay these last two games, not great. And you know, but Giassi, I think, is definitely a guy you're going to hang on to. You know, you just signed him to a new contract. Pedro, I think, has been rejuvenated for whatever reason under there. Other than that, you know, I don't think you're changing the whole roster in the offseason. Like, let's not do that. But, you know, Caleb's talked about he wants to bring in guys as starters, and you know that pushes guys down and then makes them compete. And that's the plan for summer transfer winter. You know, they're not looking to bring in depth guys necessarily. And I think that's the way you start: is, hey, we're going to bring in a guy that's going to start over Robinho, or, you know, whoever. And, you know, if Robinho doesn't push him and raise his level, and I'm just using that as an example again, then so be it. And, you know, I think that's what they did with David Guzman. Debatable, again, whether it's worked or not, but they didn't think Artur was playing well enough.
Right.
You had a chance to go get a guy that Caleb Porter knows, that Caleb Porter trusts, and is a Caleb Porter guy, quotes. And you know that pushed Artur down, and now Artur had to kind of fight his way back, and you know, so I think it's going to happen where this team's better. I also think, and I think this was an issue last year, and stop me if I'm going too long here, but I think this league started to pass this roster
exactly.
up. And maybe that's what Mike means by
100%,
the age.
100%, yep.
But when you, and you know, I think Philadelphia is the exact counterexample to this, but when you look at these some of these teams, the LAFCs, Atlanta. The Atlantas, you know, Toronto kind of really got that ball rolling. You know, if you want to be, and Greg was always able to get the guys playing well at the right time, get them into the playoffs, and then, you know, almost always make a run. And even in 2014 when they lost to New England, if they can find a way to win that series, I think they really do make a run. You know, and maybe this team will, but I think that you're going to start needing to, I think there's going to become the haves and the have-nots in MLS. And there'll be teams like Philly every once in a while who don't. But even a Portland, the money that they spent when Caleb was there, their bench, they're bringing Maxi Arruti off the bench.
Right.
You know, guys like that are now starters in MLS. And I think that's what Caleb is accustomed to. That's what Caleb has worked with in the past. Greg worked on a different level with a different budget and a slightly different MLS. I think these last 2 years have really shown a difference in the league. And I think the crew will, you know, get to that level if it's, you know, not the LAFC Atlanta spending level, but bringing in guys.
Even like a Sporting Kansas City
absolutely.
Type
that's,
of thing.
You know, and that's the team.
That's what I think the crew, I don't want to say they should emulate them, but I think that's the pack they're going to roll with, especially in 2021 with the stadium. I really think that's
and
what
even
you're going
Portland,
to see.
You know,
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
That's what to shoot for, though, is this team needs to be rolling when the stadium comes in because the revenue is going to be up. The games are going to be better attended. I'm sorry. It's going to be the new thing in town. It's almost like a new team.
That's what happened.
That's the way I look
Kansas
at it.
City. That's what happened there.
Yeah, exactly. That
turned it around from
playing
minor league baseball stadium.
Mm-hmm. When you open the new park, you're going to get a whole bunch of casual fans coming back in. It's going to be the new thing to do in town. The revenue is going to be up, and I hope that the ownership group will be pointing towards that because that's the real goal.
Yeah,
we just need to sort of keep the fire going. I hope that next season we can be more competitive than this season. But we've had a pretty good run considering the bizarre nature of the almost move. It wasn't that long ago that we were in the championship game, MLS Cup. It didn't turn out the way we wanted it to.
It's
but
becoming further and I mean.
Yeah, but still, I think it's just I'm just going to sit back and watch because I don't think we can cast any judgments here.
I don't think let me say just two quick points. I don't think people fully understand how the loss of Milton was really a detriment to this team. With the way Caleb Porter plays, a guy like that would be so perfect.
Yeah, and Waylon's good, but
yeah, but it just when I heard that injury happen, I was completely saddened because I thought we are missing out on a guy that could really flourish in a system like Porter's. And secondly, you never throw away a season ever, but this is a season where you go, in my opinion, you go, we have the team, we're blowing it up essentially, but we can't, like, team executives and presidents and coaches can't use that term. They can't
we're
blowing it up. So, of course, they have to say all the platitudes.
Trust the process.
Right. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, I'm a Bills fan. I know about it. But this season, again, you don't throw it away, but you go, are we going to win the cup? Probably not. So let's just see how Caleb Porter starts getting his tentacles in this team and makes this team a Caleb Porter club. So that way next year and then in 2021 and so on and so forth, it's a team that can start to compete. Well,
and the last thing real quick is, I know people are sick of the injury excuse. And, you know, some degree it is a reason and some degree it is an excuse. But Kansas City walked in here yesterday with a lot of injuries and got a win. So, but I do think that, you know, maybe with this last year of uncertainty, the depth was not nearly addressed enough, you know, because Greg had some guys. Greg's never had a ton of depth, but he had some guys he knew he could bring off the bench. Right now, even if the crew's at full strength, you're relying on the starting 11, you know. Who there's no one on this bench that makes an impact, and I think that's, you know, obviously you don't foresee these injuries happening, but I think that the fact that this team might move, they weren't really trying to bring anybody in with the uncertainty.
Nope.
You know, you're just kind of, you're drafting guys. You know, you sign a Robinho who, you know, if things go as planned, is a backup. But, you know, I think that was an effect that has now become a bigger thing because of the injuries, because of the absences, stuff like that. again, not an excuse, just a partial reason for maybe where things are at this point.
One thing that I just keep going back to, and I know this is probably really unhealthy, but...
So are most things you do.
Even if we had all these injuries, I still wonder what Greg could have got out of this squad. Because I think we would have been bad.
That is unhealthy.
I think we would have been bad, but I think we wouldn't have been 1 point in
But that's 5 years of a Greg Berhalter team. It's a much easier well, to
and the guy's
hit the ground
the national
running that
team
way.
Coach. Right. I mean, yeah. Let's remember yeah. this. Yeah. Right. You know, he didn't win a trophy here, and Caleb has won a trophy. Fine. You know, I think most guys who have played for both Caleb and Greg recognize that Greg is tactically, detailed-wise, everything, something pretty special.
Sure.
And, you know, if Greg had maybe lasted here a few years longer and had the Haslam budget and stuff like that, I would have been really interested to see what the crew would have done. And maybe he'll end up back in MLS and we'll get to see that at some point. But, you know, I think Greg was underappreciated maybe yeah, to some degree sure. just because he didn't win a cup of any kind. And, you know, now maybe you're kind of realizing that. He was able to get the best out of, you know, Nico Hansen at points when they needed him and things like that. And, you know, that Caleb might need better players, which now he has the option to go get yeah. just to do that. And, you know, let's not say he's not good just because he's not Greg. Assuming Greg turns out to be, hey, the real deal at the international level.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about Greg Berhalter and his efforts with the U.S. national team next as we continue Woo! On the Massive Report. If the Gold Cup brings Nicaragua and Bermuda to Red Bull Arena and no one is there, did it really happen? That's my existential question for today's edition of the Massive Report. And welcome back. All right. We put the game behind us. We will preview the Orlando City game in a little bit.
Talk about the game?
Not really, but I was gonna have Mike break down all the ball watching I saw on the goal that we gave up, but I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, no,
let's talk about the most joy that I've had watching the U.S. men's national team.
Oh yeah,
and I can't remember how long. Did everyone have as good a time watching that as I did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. And Murph, you were up there, weren't you? How was the atmosphere?
It was good. It was good. I was, it was, you know, it started off, you know, as any game does, pretty good, and then died down through the first half until the U.S. scored, and it picked back up, and then obviously the second half, once they started laying it on, everyone was into it. But, yeah, I don't, you know. It's always hard to judge a city for a national team game because you never know where people come from. But I thought Cleveland put on a good show. You know, there were people. We got there pretty early. We got there at like 2 p.m. because parking was first come, first serve. And, you know, there were people out and around Cleveland and U.S. national team stuff. And so
weather was nice.
Yeah, yeah, it was very nice. So it was a good vibe. And, you know, obviously an exciting game once things really got going. The game before it was exciting, too, which there were only like six people there to see it. But.
It was so much fun that I even found myself enjoying the play of Michael Bradley, and I hate Ooh. That guy. And I was like, you know what? He looks pretty darn good tonight, I have to admit. Well, and that was hard for me to admit.
So I had a little Twitter back and forth with a fella on about Michael Bradley because what I said was, and it wasn't just because of that beautiful pass that he had that ended up setting up a goal. It was he has shown himself valuable, and I understand there's all this cloud over him being the captain of the team that failed to qualify for the World Cup. I get it.
The captain on Saturday, though.
That's true.
That was one Zach Steffen.
That's right.
Yeah.
My guy.
So, but I think that. He gets dumped on far too much. He's still a quality player, and especially with a system like Berhalter, as Murph was saying, is, you know, it's something that's going to take time for this young, I mean, it's a young U.S. group, to figure out. So you want a veteran presence. And, you know, people getting pissy about what Bradley said about the crew and all he
I'm
was
pissy about it every day.
Yeah.
Well, I'll admit it.
But you know, here's the thing, and this is what I said to the guy on Twitter was he didn't say anything that was incorrect, especially from an outsider's perspective. It's like from an outsider's perspective, the attendance isn't great. Now we know why. It's because it was sabotaged, right? At least partially. But even so, Bez has said that he's disappointed in the response of Save the Crew this season, right? And so to make it full circle to talk about Bradley, that's all he was saying. And I think people got really overly sensitive about that when he wasn't saying anything.
It was a hard
incorrect.
Time in my life.
It is. It sucks.
Looking at losing the team. Sure. Michael Bradley's crapping all over our heads.
I get it.
Well, let's talk about Michael Bradley, the player.
Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough.
And I
not the person, because I don't like the person.
Sure. And I don't like his dad either. But,
I like his dad.
Well,
his dad's all right.
We know why you do.
Yeah. Anyway, I think if you look, I think you make a good point. In Greg's system, Michael makes a lot of sense. Now, a lot of people have been like, well, is he going to be there in 2022? Probably not.
How old is he?
31.
Yeah.
Is he really?
No, that's it?
He's 31.
I thought he was older.
But still, he plays like a 35-year-old.
Still, I think if you're the U.S. national team, you want a starting midfielder that is not 33, 34 years old going to the World Cup in that position. You want somebody to have emerged.
Yeah.
But my question right now, and Greg is trying to win games and trying to prove himself, who is there? I mean, who plays that role? Now, Will Trapp does, and we all, you know, are a little biased towards Will. But let's be honest here. Is Will an international at the World Cup level
type of
player? I just, you know, I think Will's great. I think Will will be on that World Cup team if Greg is still the coach, because Greg knows what a great guy he is, locker room-wise. You can put him in. He'll do what you need him to do. You know, you can play him like Jurgen Klinsmann did out wide, and he'll do okay. So I it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. But, you know, Michael, as he showed on Saturday, can still play at a good level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's not what he once was.
Sure.
When he's scoring from half field against Mexico. But...
That was a great game.
You know, he fits what Greg wants. He's a good leader. His teammates like him. You know, if you talk to players about Michael Bradley, you know, he's tough to play against because he fouls and he does, you know, he's a guy you like to have on your team and a guy you hate to play against. And I think that makes you a good defensive midfielder, frankly. And, but, you know, he plays some good balls. And, you know, right now, in this probably next year or so, unless somebody else steps up, I just don't know who else you put in there. And everyone I've asked, including national guys, when we've gone back and, you know, there's no good answer now.
Right.
You know, there's a couple names out there that, oh, well, maybe you start him because you need potential. But potential doesn't win you games. And Greg wants to win right now. You know, as much as he's building and there's a process and everything, and that's very true, they want to win the Gold Cup. Best players, you know, the best players you can have out there, why not?
All right, with the national team, what you have is a roster that's always loaded with guys that you don't get, unless you're looking, you don't necessarily get to see them play professionally. So give me some names of guys that have turned up on this roster who play in Germany or wherever they play, and we don't get to see them very often.
Tyler Boyd was absolutely phenomenal.
If the crew could sign
him,
right?
Where does he play?
He's in Germany.
Okay, who does he play for?
It's not Stuttgart, is it?
No. So he's in the Bundesliga then?
I believe so.
Does he get regular minutes there?
From what I know, yes.
Okay.
I'm looking this up.
He has been absolutely phenomenal.
He's in Turkey.
No, really?
Oh, he is?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You're right.
Oh, wait,
is
that a good league?
I'm going to try to pronounce it.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
It's fine, but if you're the crew, like, there's a DP you could go after.
Okay.
This is off the top of my head, like, literally right now, just dawned on me.
He's from Germany, though, right?
Oh, he plays for Ankara.
He's from the Netherlands, or from New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
That was
really?
Because he did that switch.
Yeah, sorry, I'm incorrect.
Yeah, he got that one-time switch approved.
He qualifies under the arcane citizenship rules that you see. You know, grandma was
his
American.
No, I believe his parents are American.
Okay.
He was born in New Zealand.
Okay.
One parent from New Zealand.
Okay. So,
well, that's how Germany won their World Cup. Close, it was from Poland. Like, they have all kinds of guys from everywhere else
but
Germany.
I got no problem with it. I find sometimes it's hard to get to know these guys when they just show up.
Sure.
And I'm interested in where they play their professional soccer and how much playing time they get and so forth. So he's one.
He's one.
Certainly.
I like what Weston McKennie's given them.
Oh, okay. He's been absolutely terrific.
I think, you know, that's a guy, still young. I'm not sure how old, but definitely young, that, you know, is going to give you a good shift every time out. You know, I think if you look just at the guys who have played right now, you know, obviously there's the Pulisic. You know, Timothy Weah, you know, went with the under-21 team and he's going to be a factor for this team going forward.
Well, that's the other thing is the U-20s showed pretty well in the U-20 World Cup.
Yeah.
who are some of those guys that we're going to see when it gets down to the World Cup qualifying that is so vital for the U.S. program to get through and get in? Are any of those kids going to be a factor?
I think there could be. It's so hard. You know, you look at – I saw this during the World Cup that, like, less than 20% of that roster usually ever makes a World Cup appearance or something. You know, something along – Something like that. Just, you know, you never know how
so
a guy gets minutes and who emerges that maybe wasn't. But, you know, I liked – what was the forward's name? Soto?
Oh,
mm-hmm. I don't know.
Sebastian Soto.
I really liked what he gave. Now, again, different level. You know, you're playing against 20, 21, you know, year olds. But, you know, I thought he looked good. They had a couple central midfielders I really liked. One of them plays in MLS.
It was Weah was the – I mean, Weah's the guy.
Sure.
I mean, if Weah's not on the next World Cup squad, it's because he's hurt. I mean, he is a phenomenal talent. He's the future from an attacking perspective of the U.S. national team. I think him and Pulisic together is going to be so much fun to watch if you give
him
another year.
Pulisic was so much fun to watch the other night, too, well, he always is. I always enjoy watching him.
Josh Sargent, another guy.
He's not on either team right now.
Okay.
But he's a guy that is starting to get minutes with Bremen. Is that where he is?
I'll tell you what, though.
How old guy is he?
He's young.
Josh Sargent, I think he's like 19.
Oh,
he's real young.
He was one of those guys that was left off the U-20 roster because they thought he would make the Gold Cup, and then Berhalter didn't bring him on the Gold Cup, so people were like, what the hell are you
awkward.
Doing?
Awkward.
But here's the thing. I mean, I think also Paul Areola. I mean, he has been absolutely terrific.
And where does he play as professional?
DC.
All right.
I mean, and he's really stepped. I feel like he plays better, it seems, with the national team than even DC.
I agree.
Well, another guy that plays better with the national team is Jossie Zarrias.
I'm glad you did that.
Who looked so strong in tight spaces with his back to the goal as a target player and making himself a physical presence. And then when he turns around in the second half and faces the goal, he scores two and doinks another one off the post. He made a real case for himself as not just a placeholder, I think, the other night, right?
Yeah, he finished well. I think that he should sneak Josh Wolf back in his luggage or something and try to, you know, can we sign Josh Wolf as a designated player and bring him back?
Designated player coach?
Score some freaking goals. Yes, please. Sign him to the roster. I don't care. Just have him teach Jossie. I mean, he plays so much better under Berhalter and Josh
Wolf. It's unbelievable.
It is so frustrating.
Well, and I mean,
I like it for the U.S., but God, yeah, I miss that.
To our conversation earlier, just Greg has found ways to unlock these forwards. I mean, you know, you go back, you know, they scored, I want to say, 50 goals the first year, and it was a combination of, like, Jairo Arrieta and, you know, Adam Bedell, and, you know, guys like this that, you know, bits and pieces chipping together, and, you know, they finally figured it out towards the end of the season. I don't know how Greg does it, and Josh Wolf should get a lot more credit than he does, but, you know, I asked Jossie, and I'm going to write about this for tomorrow, about the differences, you know, asking him about bringing it back to Columbus and whatnot, and, you know, it is a little bit of a different system, like you talked about, but it's just, I don't know. He definitely feels comfortable.
He
playing.
Looks confident.
Yeah.
And that jumped out of the screen.
And one of the biggest things that Jossie doesn't get credit for, and I think this led to the confidence to his goal on his two goals on Saturday, is the defensive work, and he still does that very well under Caleb, is, you know, knowing when to press, knowing when to step off, you know, knowing when he needs to make an effort, dropping back. That's one thing I think he does more with the national team, is he gets more involved on the ball, and that was something he wasn't doing a ton of last year, and he called it something along the lines of, like, our system on steroids when referring to, like, what they did at the Crew and what they're doing at the national team, just because you have, you know, a different group of players. But yeah, it's if they can bottle that Jossie and bring it back for this, you know, once they do get back, they'll be in a much more comfortable spot offensively.
What's the outcome in the Gold Cup, you think? Let's go around the panel here. Do we win it?
You know, I mean, Mexico didn't look amazing the other night.
Well, they're very young, as we were talking about between segments here.
But the U.S. are too, outside of, like, a Bradley and things like that. But gosh, I don't know. I mean, if they can continue and consistently play the way they did in that game, of course they could beat almost anybody, certainly in our region, right? But just like anything, what happens is when you're learning something new, you might get it for a little while, and then you're going to hit a little valley. Then you're going to get your peak again, and then a little valley. So,
well, and teams start to look at it too, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean, I know it's a short tournament, but you know, they're going to be watching film every opponent they face about, okay, we're learning a little bit more about how Greg Berhalter likes to play. And fortunately for the U.S., Greg is pretty good at adjusting and, you know, figuring those things out. You know, I think this is a team that should make the final.
Yeah, sure.
I think
absolutely.
It should.
I agree. I mean, it seems
it
set
should
up
be
for
US
USA
and Mexico. Yeah.
When you get to the knockout round, and there are, I think, and this is something that I think people have underestimated a little bit. I saw a lot of this on Twitter in the first half about, you know, they should be beating Trinidad more than 1-0. Let's remember that MLS has benefited a lot of CONCACAF teams.
Absolutely.
Not just the United States and Mexico. And I think teams have gotten better. So, you know, if you get knocked out because you have a bit of an off day and, you know, you play whoever who has a good day, you know, that's going to happen. And I don't think that should be the indictment on this team. But, you know, talent-wise, coaching-wise, I think this team should be in the final. And then you see what happens.
That was the irony of the 2018 World Cup qualifying, is that we made the teams, meaning MLS, made the teams in our region better, which came back to bite us in the ass.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Trinidad was better.
Yeah.
And then Romain Torres scores the goal
right.
that ultimately is what undoes the United States right. to get them in. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Alex, what do they do?
I mean, I think we've got a clear path to the final, and Mexico's got a really clear path to the final.
Well, that'll be fun.
I don't think we can get by Mexico. I still don't think – I still think this team – beating Trinidad badly is a good start, but they're still a step off Mexico, I think.
Absolutely. And that could be. One thing that I thought was interesting that I just wanted to share with people is actually Patrick Goldan asked Greg after the game about, you know, you're through. How do you approach this next game in terms of player rotation? You know, do you want to get guys minutes, rest guys, whatever? And Greg was literally perplexed. It was like, I'm sure they've talked about it. Like I said, Greg
that's good.
Is every detail, but he honestly, he said, you know, I don't know. I've never been through this before. You know, this type of tournament with a group stage and then,
sure.
you know, you're already through type of thing. And so I'll be very interested to see what lineup they roll out, if they try and keep it going or if they, you know, rotate some guys.
I think he needs to treat this as if every game is life or death.
I think so, too.
And I think that's the context that they need. Whatever it is that his 11 will be and whoever the subs are, I think they have to treat it as a must win. That's what I think. How about I did not get a chance to watch the women's game the earlier today.
It was great.
Ralph, did you watch it? Alex, who watched it? It was it was closer than expected.
Ralph is our
they got their first test. Did they not, Ralph?
Aficionado.
Take us through it.
Can you? Am I good on the?
You're live, Ralph.
You're
live.
Okay, I'm out of my corner. You guys
White
have
Claw.
To
start. The White Claw is empty. He's ready to go.
Mango's not great. I'm more of a ruby grapefruit kind of guy.
All right. So what happened?
So, yeah. Group stage knockout football, as they say. Group stage is done. United States won total of, I think, 18-0 out of the group stage. Didn't concede a goal at all. U.S. comes out early on in the game. Megan Rapinoe converts a penalty kick after a foul on Tobin Heath in the box. Some argued that was a very soft penalty. I tend to agree on that one. More on that in a second. JP Della Camera, the curse of the commentator.
One of the worst I've ever seen of the curse of the commentator.
That was terrible. It talks about the 647-minute shutout streak of the United States women's national team. And wouldn't you know it, right on cue, Spain puts one right past Alyssa Nair.
Yeah, as he says that, like, as they give the ball away at the back. It was just set up perfectly. If you haven't seen the goal, go watch it. It was a good goal.
Yeah, it was a good goal, but, you know, the Alyssa Nair, who's kind of under fire a little bit after the departure of Hope Solo after the 2016 Olympics, questionable decision-making, releasing the ball to Sauerbrunn in front of the goal. As Mike or any other soccer coach would tell you, that's the danger area. If you feel any heat, you should really punt it out of bounds and let everybody reset. But nonetheless, onward we go into the game. Very chippy. Lots of fouls, a lot of start-stopping. The center official Reluctantly did not give many cards out in this game. Megan Rapinoe somehow found one. Alex Morgan was getting hacked and slashed all the way up down the field. And this is not me being a homer. This is just being a statement of fact. Alex Morgan was rendered absolutely useless this game. Was very invisible there. Megan Rapinoe, as Murph said on Twitter today, had arguably probably her worst game and still put two goals into the net today. But Rapinoe was invisible. Jill Ellis didn't go to her bench until head coach Jill Ellis. Thank you. Didn't go to her bench until I believe it was the 85th minute when Carly Lloyd came on. There were screams of substitutes. I tend to think I subscribe to the thought that introduce Kristen Press in the game, who didn't come in until literally 90 seconds were left in the match. But Carly Lloyd comes on. She uses all three subs within the span of maybe 10 minutes after plus added time. Spain was pressing. Rose Lavelle absolutely was head and shoulders the woman of the match.
Ohio native
Rose Lavelle was head and shoulders the woman of the match. Very creative, very devastating in midfield. I think Sam Mewes as well, for the fans of the women's game who know who Sam Mewes is, was a powerhouse offensive midfielder along with Julie Ertz. Julie Ertz doesn't look like she's hurt at all. Abby Dahlkemper and Becky Sauerbrunn look very good at the back. Crystal Dunn, give that girl a day off. She was running up and down the field all day long. She plays typically as a midfielder and a forward for her club in North Carolina. But nonetheless,
She was a fullback today.
Jill Ellis is doing the Jurgen Klinsmann by playing wingers as fullbacks. She's the
Robert Varzina.
The women's version of the Fabian Johnson, if you will.
Yeah, they don't really have any actual natural fullbacks on that roster, right?
O'Hara and Krieger are, but they both play on the right side typically. But so nonetheless, I think we get to. What minute was that foul? I'm trying to think. There was a questionable call.
It's like 75th minute or something like that.
Yeah, that's about right. 75th minute, Rose Lavelle's dribbling in from the right side, comes in, takes a cut across the box, goes across the top of the 18, looks to pick up a foul. In slow motion, doesn't look like that she flinches at all or anything like that. It's called a penalty by the center official right off the bat. And then they go to VAR to take a look at it. And, of course, as VAR has reared its ugly head in this tournament numerous times, everything in slow motion looks twice as worse as it does. And it looks very embellished. But then there's one angle on the Fox broadcast, and I know we'll probably open this up to discussion because I know this is a very hot-button issue on Twitter right now, is was it a penalty, was it not? Lavelle didn't exert or show any signs of pain. But it did look like the Spanish defender got a piece of her with her cleat and raked down. Not intentionally. It happens. It's a contact sport. But nonetheless, it was a penalty. Alex Morgan steps up to take the penalty. There was, I believe, an injured player from Spain there. Some talk from Jill Ellis leads to Megan Rapinoe stepping back up. Rapinoe steps back up. Of course, she's already kicked one penalty in this game. And then you have to decide what direction is she going to go. She goes to the goalkeeper is right, beats it, uses literally just about every inch of the net there, hits it side netting. U.S., I don't want to say cruises off to a 2-1 victory, but gets a gritty 2-1 victory, sets up a pretty big matchup with France on Friday in Paris for the right to go to the semifinal.
France also struggled, right?
France did struggle, yeah. Yes. They played Brazil. I'm not sure if that game went to extra time.
It did.
But Marta, speaking of which, had a very good speech afterwards that if you guys get a chance out there, take a look at.
It's her fifth World Cup?
Fifth World Cup, yeah. But she talked about the future of women's football in Brazil and was kind of passing off the torch, so to speak. Very, very empowering stuff. I definitely say you should take a look at it. But yeah, Friday's match, I'm not feeling good heading into Friday's match, especially with how the United States played. Alyssa Nair scares the absolute bejesus out of me. Her decision-making coming off the line was very questionable. She was about a half second, maybe a second too late coming off the line.
This is shocking because I just had a discussion with my daughter over the weekend was that I find myself not getting as fired up for the Women's World Cup that I want to be only because I feel like we're so dominant, and this was during group play, that I felt like a lot of the drama was taken out of it. Mm-hmm. And there really wasn't a lot of question. And now that seems to have changed, and I'm showing my ignorance here, I guess. That it's going to be more competitive than I thought.
And I think what Jill's trying to do, especially she was getting with the high press and Spain was trying to create a lot of overloads. I don't think the U.S. saw that coming. And I think, you know, Alyssa Nair is a good goalkeeper, but I followed her when I covered the Red Stars in 2017. And one thing I always noticed is she was very antsy to get off of her line or spring into action. And this is really the first couple games that she's been tested. So it's always kind of worried me a little bit, especially with the U.S.'s tendency to build out of the back. With Hope Solo, she was exceptional at it. She could see a pass and just bolt a pass out to the wings, you know, vis-a-vis the Megan Rapinoe goal in the 2011 Women's World Cup to Abby Wambach. But, you know, Solo's distribution was great. Nair's has always been a question mark, and I was wondering when it would come into question. And unfortunately, it looks like it's kind of rearing its head at the wrong time. They've got a lot of things that they need to figure out coming up here on Friday. But, yeah, I don't want to say put Ashlyn Harrison because she was she's the goalkeeper that was behind Hope Solo and trained under Hope Solo for a very long time. But I don't think you make the switch this late in the tournament, but it is scary.
I really enjoyed the game for the same things that you were talking about, where the group stage was kind of just like, okay, we're going to smash all these teams. It's going to be fine. This game was kind of scary. They got the first goal. It looked like it was going to be all right, but they were shaky the entire game. Rose Lavelle was very good, but most of the passes that she played, which were great passes, didn't lead to anything. They would immediately lose possession once they got the ball anywhere near the 18-yard box. Right. Alex Morgan was a pace off on every play.
I think she's hurt.
I am 100% convinced she's carrying an injury. Yeah, she is not fit. And to be honest with you, I would be using her off the bench. I would put somebody else up there, whether it's Horan or even Carly Lloyd. Throw somebody up top because she, every time there would be a ball, and it would be a perfect ball, she would be two steps behind it where she needed to be. And it was, there were some shaky moments. If they play like that against France, they are screwed.
Especially with the huge home field advantage for the host country, that bears huge weight in this game. You know they want to take the USA down.
Right.
What time's that? Yeah. What time does that game kick on Friday?
Game kicks at 3:00. Don't be fooled by Fox. They want you to watch it too.
Well, let me ask this real quick. Just, do you think this is a good thing that it happened today? Like a wake up call almost. Like, hey, you know, we can't do this out of the back. We have to bring it. You know, we can't cruise like we did in the group stage against these knockout teams. You know, there's a reason these knockout teams are here. You know, maybe it's better that it happened today and they get through it as opposed to, you know, cruising today to 3-0 win and then, you know, you go against France feeling overconfident. You know, I don't know. You watch the women win. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same with any team. Is you get that haymaker, you get that punch in the jaw, and you kind of sit back and you go, whoa, that hurt. You know,
you survive it though.
Yeah,
is the thing,
but
right?
You survive and you build and you come back stronger. I think they're going to go take the tape, hopefully look at this a little bit better. And again, you know, I know we talk about, you know, the big gripe with crew fans and, you know, with Berhalter and now Porter as the substitution patterns. I have absolutely no idea what Jill Ellis was doing with her substitutions. You know,
she was worried about extra time.
I think maybe that was it.
I mean, even after they scored, like, that's kind of what I felt was like, well, if we give up a goal, we still want these subs. But I don't think you can think that way.
Do you get four subs too?
You get a four sub.
So, you know, she could have done two right at extra time. But I, you know, the fact that she was kind of planning for extra time is,
and this is just an assumption on my part.
Well, I think they were saying, you know, Della Camera and Allie Wagner, the two commentators in the game, were kind of hinting at that. But to get you back to your point, Murph, to bring it back home, I think this is a great thing that this happens against a quality opponent. And the thing that you're starting to see now in the women's game is you're starting to see a lot of these federations pump a lot of money into their programs.
Good.
England's doing it. Germany's doing it. Spain's doing it.
It's great for the game.
France is doing it.
It needs to happen, right? We can't have it be top heavy.
Like we were talking last week when you were sitting out there, Brian, was that, you know, I think Serbia, who'd we say won the under-20 World Cup or something like that? Some random country that's not good at senior-level football. But anyway, Spain's squad that they were saying was a lot of their under-20 squad just a couple years ago. And Hermoso, who I believe Jennifer Hermoso, who's their big striker, is like she was one of those catalysts. But you're seeing that's why England's starting to get really good. Germany's continuing to tick up. as well as France. And now Spain is going, you know, I imagine they probably ascend the rankings from 10th in the FIFA World Cup rankings to, you know, maybe they crack the top five after this tournament.
I think, real quick, just on that point, I think that, you know, I've, like, the last Women's World Cup, I watched the U.S. games, and that was pretty much it. And probably the World Cup before that, I can't think back that long. But this World Cup, I've watched more of the games, and it's been competitive, good soccer, you know? Like, you can see, to Ralph's point, that there's been an effort in a lot of these countries to, you know, even if it's not the ones you've named, some of the smaller countries, you know, I think the level just in general has raised, and that's forced other countries not named the U.S., which are already at the top, to raise their level. And, you know, it's good
for the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing I would say about the U.S. team, I during that game, Spain would have stretches of possession where it looked like the U.S. was under a lot of pressure, but anytime they would get the ball in our box, we were clearing it without really looking like we were breaking a sweat. Defensively, we looked like we had things under control. I got the feeling, and Ralph, I want your opinion on this, I got the feeling that they had another gear they could shift into if they needed to, and that they were almost either saving themselves for 120 or saving themselves for a future game. But I don't think that we've seen the best from this team yet. I feel like a lot of, especially the veterans.
13-0 wasn't the best?
Well,
I mean, I get the opponent.
I feel like we're going to see a higher work rate than we saw against France, and maybe that's going to be the decision maker. If you look at the 538 kind of estimates on team strength, they're within a half a point of each other out of 100. Wow. I mean, these are very even teams, but I feel like they can show more than what they did, and they're saving themselves for that game, and I think they're going to treat it like a final.
Well, it was a warm day today, from my understanding. I think the temperatures, from what I heard,
you
about
were there in the press box. Right?
I was there. Yeah, I flew back.
Quick flight.
God, this budget's
needed,
great, man.
No wonder you needed that white cloth.
Yeah, yeah, it was
exhausted.
It was Perrier in the plane on the way home, but. No, from my understanding from a lot of the reporters that I follow that were there, it was a very warm day today. I think they said it was in the mid to high 80s, almost low 90s in certain parts of the city. So I don't know, again, how much that plays. You know, I've talked to plenty of players after heat, and, you know, you almost have to start preparing. The general thing that I've heard from coaches is you generally have to start planning about 48 hours before the game, which, again,
can't go out drinking.
Yeah, exactly. Which kind of comes into the, you know, there was a kind of a debate of whether the U.S. should have put their full-strength squad out against Sweden, because if they would have finished second place, I think they would have gained an additional two days of rest or something like that.
And you don't fleece France.
That's a
lot. Yeah, and you duck France. Okay. But
I don't buy that, though. Go. You gotta beat the teams. Just
all right,
go win.
So
Bret Hart said to be the man, you got to beat the man.
Yeah. Well,
France on Friday at 3 p.m. We got to take a break. When we come back, a very quick preview of Orlando and a nod to the late, great Ziggy. When we come back to wrap up tonight's edition of the Massive Report. We are back at Hendox, where there is a woman wearing an Iron Maiden shirt, and I approve. Thank you. Yeah. I love it. We are brought to you by not Iron Maiden, but 180 Property Development. They're your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Even a black basement man cave with black light Iron Maiden posters all over the wall. Check 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects.
Who
fellas,
let him into my basement?
Fellas, I sent out a group message this afternoon on whatever. What is that thing we use?
Slack.
I said, I have to go see the National at Express Live, and thank God the weather's cleared. It's my fault. I'm allegedly sort of the guy who steers the ship, I guess. I don't know. But I
and
was,
you do it well.
Well, I said I need to keep Captain this thing Stubing. Moving, and you guys have done such a great job with fascinating discussion about all the different topics that we have that I have not been able to keep you moving. So at some point, I'm going to put my headphones down on the table, and I'm going to walk out because I got to go to the show.
It was Ralph talking about the national team, wasn't it? The women's national
Ralph,
team.
Ralph, you did a great job.
And
you've got me fired up for the France game on Friday at 3 o'clock. Don't be fooled by Fox, you said.
Yeah, don't be fooled
it's
by
It's 3 o'clock.
I'll be
the
at
kickoff
Endeavor.
Against France is going to be a good match. All right, so before we get to the actual match against Orlando City, I know, Murph, you were telling us between segments that you had a story to share about the man that we will honor on Saturday night and put him in the Ring of Honor, our friend Ziggy, who brought us to glory just over 10 years ago.
Yeah, in 2008, at the end of 2008, I was out at MLS Cup, and this was pre-writing days at Stone College, and so I was there in my fan glory. And after the game, later that evening, they allowed fans to come to the hotel, and they had, like, previously they had a big dinner for all the players and coaches and family and everything, and they opened it up to all the fans. And so I end up sitting at a table with three of Ziggy's college teammates. He played now, if you can imagine, that's Ziggy awesome. Playing soccer at UCLA. He played
yeah.
at UCLA.
Yeah.
And they were good.
Yeah.
And they're just telling me stories. It starts off with, like, soccer stories, and then it goes to, like, frat party stories. Uh-huh. And, like, you know, they're drinking and whatnot. And I'm not going to lie to you, I'm drinking out of a bottle of Jaeger at this party.
Oh, my God.
Well, somebody there couldn't finish. I won't name him. But somebody there couldn't finish the bottle of Jaeger, couldn't even start the bottle of Jaeger because they had drank so much the previous few days and they couldn't take it back on
their
bag.
I don't blame them.
So they were like, do you want this? And we were...
lethal.
It's poison.
We were roughly 21, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
So we weren't going to get our own stuff.
So you're out drinking. You're under 21. You're out drinking with Ziggy's college...
I mean, we're presuming.
College teammates... his college yeah, buddies.
And they're just telling, and I'm like trying to picture the Ziggy that I'm looking across the room at, doing any of the things.
What
you
did
know,
he do?
They're talking about, like, keg stands and, you know, things like this. And I'm just like, how, you know, so that forever, I'll forever remember Ziggy as the crew coach that wore the scarf around and, you know, his days at the beginning of MLS in LA and all of that stuff. But in the back of all of that, there's like Ziggy at frat parties doing keg stands and, you know, hitting on women and things like that I just am trying to imagine. And so, yeah. So when you see that on Saturday, think of what he did for the crew.
I'm not going to think of that on Saturday. Keg stands?
Well, no, think about the crew.
Think about the crew.
That's not what I was expecting,
yeah,
but
it
I
was,
like
it. It was quite the party.
No,
I also confused Guillermo and his brother at the party because they're identical.
Yeah,
to
they do look right. exactly like. It's kind of frightening.
Yeah.
Right, well, it'll be a great moment to honor the great man Ziggy Schmidt.
By the way, nobody
all too early.
Yeah, no, nobody, at least not that I'm aware of, in my years of following MLS and everything, had a particularly bad thing to say about him.
No, no one did. No one did, and you're right. That does say a lot. A legend of the league and a man who brought us the cup. And we will be forever grateful. And I know a lot of tears are going to be shed on Saturday night. I wish I could be there. We are heading out on vacation Saturday morning. So you guys, you know, pour one out from your keg stand in the parking lot for me. I'm sure Bart, who's not here, will be in charge of that somehow.
We'll
the only
sure
time
Bart
I ever
that.
See Bart at games, literally in the beer line. One of us, okay, both of us are in the beer line. That's where I see him. So, Bart, you're in charge of pouring one out for Ziggy. So, guys, I don't want to talk about the Orlando game. I'm not going to be able to watch it because I'm going to be on the road. So I'm going to put my headphones down. I'm going to thank you guys for being here. I want you guys to preview the game without me. I got to go see the National. I love the National. Cincinnati Natives.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of Cincinnati I like. The part that
or
they gave us
favorite,
the National.
FC Cincinnati, right? Right now?
Oh, my God.
You don't like them? Oh, okay.
So you guys...
tickets for more than $2.
You guys take it home. Thank you. And remember, you can win tickets to the Orlando game and pay homage to Ziggy yourself. Just check our social media, massreport.com, our Twitter feed, and that's how you can win them. Thanks, guys.
Bye, Brian.
I gotta go.
You're the man. Have fun. Enjoy your show, sir. All right, so...
Sun's out, bud's out.
So am I the host now?
No, we've got Ralph here.
Ralph is the host. My God.
Well, we can't let you do it, Alex.
We're putting Ralph as host. He's already had a White Claw. This is going to be trouble. My goodness
gracious.
You had
a Red Bull.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Just so you could go crazy over Caleb Porter.
Caleb Porter makes me crazy.
I got you.
Mike doesn't know how to operate a...
microphone.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
All right. Well, this was kind of like we were back on Google Hangout.
It was a substitution. There. It was a substitution. Yeah. We made an 85th
minute.
Yeah. What is that? What does Josh Poland say?
Change, just like
ladies
Joe
and gentlemen, your attention, please. Substitution in the 85th minute.
Let's just end this podcast.
Ralph, let's just go.
Are we on right now? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
Come on, White Claw, let's go.
Preview Orlando.
Really? Okay. Well, hey, guys. all right. This is fun. All right, Orlando City coming to... Wait. It's not Orlando this week.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
Ralph,
oh, you've been
so engrossed
in the U.S. women's team that you're not paying attention.
I looked at the schedule earlier this week. All right, so...
Think they were playing, just out of curiosity?
I don't know.
Bethlehem
Every week's
Steel.
A blur, dude. Right. Every week's a blur.
Did you write the game preview for this?
No. I'm not for, like, the following... I'm the following week. Ironically, it's the week that I'm out. But, all right, so Orlando City, home of the 2019 MLS All-Star Game, which we didn't talk about this week. But
there's no crew players.
There's no crew players.
What's that? I don't know what that is. Let's just move
but,
on.
But, yeah, the Fighting Lions coming in with Manchester United alum Nani. Murph, how do you feel about that?
I could talk about Nani for a long time. I won't bore you with that.
Okay.
I'm interested to see him, though, just like I was any...
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing here, boys, because the Lions can't seem to get anything going. You know, they've got this star power with Dom Dwyer, Sasha Kljestan, Nani, and
you just listed two players that don't have star power and one that might.
MLS star power is that a little bit different?
No, because Dom Dwyer's star power is Sidney LaRue.
It's like the kind of star power
also,
that
he
you
left
need
it
to
in Kansas City.
The kind of star that you need a telescope to see. You know, like.
She's coming back soon.
I almost tweeted that during the women's game today.
Yeah.
But so anyway, it's a team that's struggling. And that's great radio.
Just keep going.
The crew are also struggling.
The crew are also struggling. Guys, is this the game that the black and gold finally break through? Alex, nope. I'll turn it over to you.
I don't think so. I want to. Because I haven't seen anything. I want to see, like, at least progress. You know, like, I feel like we've got to get up 10 flights of stairs, and we're sitting at the bottom of the first flight, like, oh,
stairs
man, there's a lot of stairs. Yeah, I haven't seen any progress.
Have you seen how humid it is outside? The stairs are real tough.
I think we're going to lose
2-1.
2-1? I think we're going to lose 2-1.
We're assuming we're going to score.
I think we're going to score. I think
is Patrick Mullins going to score a goal, or is J.J. Williams going to be the cult favorite that the crew fans need?
I think we're going to get Kemper. Some sort of dumpster fire corner kick goal that's going to get tapped in by
OG.
Josh Williams or something like that.
Okay.
You know, just some sort of scramble for the ball and somebody side foots it into the back of the net kind of thing.
Do they roof it, or is it a daisy cutter?
It's bottom corner, just tapped in, they pass it into the corner. I think it's going to be a garbage goal. I'm not expecting much from this game.
Mr. Mike, how are you?
You know, I'm very good, thank you.
Okay.
I'm optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic?
Cautiously,
actually
for sure.
Optimistic.
No, cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
I'll be curious. Now, it's going to be difficult without Awful. He's not going to be there. I think it's likely that a comp's probably...
Would you say it'd be awfully difficult?
Oh, boy. How many times has that pun been used in the last 5 years?
The hour mark and everything went to shit.
See, Brian leaves and...
That was the problem. Brian.
Yeah, Brian left and the kids are just running amok. I am cautiously optimistic, but I will say it's going to be tough. But here's the thing about MLS. Again, as we've talked about, you never know. It doesn't matter. You can't bet on this league. You can never guess or you can never predict accurately. So just for the sake of Ziggy Schmidt, in his honor, the crew are going to get 3 points. That's what I'm saying.
Oh. What's the score, though?
Stay tuned to Mass Report later this week.
1-0.
I'm not going to write one.
I know.
1-0.
You've given up, just 1-0. Sam.
There is going to be a very good article out tomorrow, I presume.
Yeah, it should be tomorrow.
Okay, you guys should look that. It's about Caleb Porter. You guys will like it.
Oh, yeah, I know. I spent a lot of hours working on that.
Wait a minute. No, wait a second. I will not let you take credit.
I agree
for
with
my work.
Mike.
Pat, welcome to the conversation.
I think that I think I've seen enough from this team. Like, I saw enough on Sunday of positive things in the first half. And I was concerned the entire first half. If they don't score,
yeah,
you know, they're going to give up this goal, and then they won't be able to score. But, you know, I liked what I saw from Hector Jimenez. I still think Pedro Santos has some stuff, though I don't think he's as comfortable in the middle. I'll be interested to see what's up with David Akam. He was in the locker room after the game. They didn't have him on crutches or anything, which makes me feel a little bit better. Not that you need crutches for a hamstring all the time. But even Luis Argudo, I like some of his game. Mm-hmm. It's not completely there yet, but you know, it keeps, and I've said this a lot this year. It's just like there are these moments where they play really well, and I'm like, if you put that in, this game's different. I mean, there's moments when they give up goals like they did on Sunday, where it's like, what are you doing? And you know, I feel like at some point this is going to even out a little. And I'm not saying this team all of a sudden goes on a run, but I think I felt like it would come against Kansas City. I'm going to bank on it coming against Orlando.
One thing you failed to mention about Luis Argudo, great knee tattoo.
It's a whole like shin leg tattoo at this point.
Yeah, I also want to chime in and say it's pretty cool. It's like the compass, right?
Yeah. It's like would we determine Sam not a cool compass? Yeah.
It's like a Christopher Columbus thing.
Ask him.
Something.
He's a very nice guy.
I don't see enough of him, though.
Yeah, well.
It's mostly game day. Occasional training session. Yeah.
Anyway. I need more information on that. Can we get, Ralph, that's your next Massive Report article. I need a long form article on the entire history from conception to actuality of Luis Argudo's leg tattoo.
I tried to write 10,000 words about Luis last week.
Yeah.
And I asked Caleb Porter three questions about him. Like, I talked to Luis. Good stuff. I asked Caleb three questions about him, and he changed the topic in all of them. And I don't think it had anything to do with not wanting to talk about Luis, but when Caleb has a message that he wants to get out, he's going to turn any question in that direction. And it was about being focused on Kansas City. You saw what that happened.
You know
that resulted.
You know what I would be interested in writing about would be like,
it seems like off the air topic.
Say if Emmanuel Pogatetz
it's already in
was
the dump.
Still
Let's just keep
on
going.
The team.
Mad
I
dog.
Heard he's got some sweet tattoos that I would have loved to do.
He does.
He has a lot of good tattoos. His whole back was tatted, if I remember correctly.
Alright, Brian can never leave mid-show.
Like Zlatan level tattoo?
I think that the thing that this
Not
team
a
needs...
Not Zlatan level player, though.
I think this team needs a guy like Pogatetz, because I'm pretty sure that Pogatetz would beat somebody up in the locker room if we lost like four games in a row. He would flip out. He would throw stuff in the locker room at human beings. Like, he'd not just like throw it against the wall, but he would throw it at like a rookie. You know,
who would be his best friend though?
I would be. His best friend when he was here before.
Who was the midfielder from Chicago that they had?
Daniel Palladini.
Yeah, him. He's another one of those guys.
He was an asshole though. He beat his wife up though. Too,
yeah,
I think.
That's my point. He would lose his mind if they lost.
Yes.
Pogatetz only beat up people who deserved it.
That was only alleged, I believe.
Yeah. Pogatetz.
I thought it was pretty confirmed, though. I thought he got suspended for it.
I don't know whatever happened with that. I do miss Mad Dog, though.
Allergy attack.
Hanging out with him at Endeavor is one of my all-time favorite crew members. Yeah, it was Zauber Brewing Company at the time, but that was very fun.
All right.
He's a cool guy.
Second Endeavor reference today.
Oh, God. And we're at Hen Docs, too. This isn't
We already did our prediction, so we can just end the podcast, right? Bye, buddies.
Yeah, so...
Oh, I said
2-1. I don't think it's going to be a good game for Crew SC. I still am not a believer in the Patrick Mullins is the target forward era. I think let's give JJ a start.
Well, you missed our explanation.
I know. I was in the corner banished because you guys didn't like me drinking White Claw.
You were drinking your White Claw. We didn't want to interrupt.
It's terrible.
But anyway, I think the Orlando City Don Garber All-Star Game having Lions are going to win. Actually, no, I don't. Yeah, it's going to be a gritty, boring 1-0 game. Orlando City takes the victory. Murph's taking my glasses as the show's going on right now. This is wonderful. But
this is way worse than Google Hangout.
This is fine. But anyway, guys, thanks so much for listening. We got to thank our sponsors, 1-8 Property Development, building fancy, fancy things for you for fancy, fancy people. Hen Docs Pub. Oh, God. My glasses are on incorrectly. Hen Docs Pub for letting us put up this nonsense here. And for my hosts, for host Brian Phillips, who should never, ever sub out of this again, Mike Krosky, Alex Stanek, Patrick Murphy,
I won't be
Sam Fahmy. My name is Ralph Shudell.
Thank God.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm sorry you had to endure the last 15 minutes. Have a great evening, everybody.
Bye, buddies.